Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Elodie Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. And today is Tuesday, January 5th, 2016. Good afternoon, everyone, and good afternoon, Al.
Hello, Melody.
Let's get started with the market reports right away. We have gold. Let me just double-check to see any lasting changes in the New York spot price. We have gold up $4 today at $1,079. We have silver up 13, back over $14 at $1,408. Platinum is up $5 at $892, but palladium is down 4 at $538. And for those of you who are interested in our special, the AU $5 Liberty Gold Piece, along with 20 of the 1-ounce Silver Eagles, dated 2016, silver's up, gold's up, and they're still being sold at yesterday's price. So if you get your orders in today, we'll hold that price for you, even though both silver and gold are higher. And that $700 does include all your shipping costs. So make sure you give Carla a call at 1-800-375-4188 right now. And for the late night listeners, make sure many of you do that you leave messages on the in our answering machine, and we'll make sure the prices are locked in. Moving right along, we have the USDX today up 0.52. at 99.36, almost back up to that 100 level. Crude oil pressure, 93 to the downside at 35.83. And the paper markets today, after their big recovery yesterday, they followed through, even though they were down. It was hovering just at this level most of the day, up 9. On the Dow, 17,158. You have the NASDAQ down 11 at 48.91 and the S&P up 4 at 2016. The 10-year yield, 2.25%. And, of course, with the strong showing of the U.S. index, you have euro pressure down 0.72 at 108. Germany, after that big drop yesterday, 4%, they only managed to be up quarter of a point. They were up 26 points after that huge drop yesterday. And certainly China had a little bit of volatility in their markets. We can talk about that now. I did want to talk a little bit about the GDP revisements coming from the Federal Reserve Bank of Atlanta, but I guess China had some more volatility in their markets, Al.
Yeah, China, they had a little more today, and some people were predicting yesterday that the big news, they had a serious drop on Monday, as most everyone knows. But I saw one commentator who predicted that the big problem would be, would we see a second day of decline? If the market opened lower and closed lower today, that would signal that there was an additional problem. It was deeper than what we saw on Monday. However, markets were down in China today, but not down a lot, and some of them were up. Here's an article from Business Insider in Australia. Chinese stocks had another crazy day, having plunged 7% on Monday, closing the session early on the same day market circuit breakers were introduced by regulators. Chinese, in other words, China could have, market could have fallen more than 7%. They closed her down early.
They closed it down.
Yeah, to prevent it from falling. Now, this is important, all right? And we'll explain why when we get a little deeper, as we get a little deeper into this article and into the program. Chinese stocks endured another wild session on Tuesday, swinging between losses of over 3% to gains in excess of 1% throughout the course of the trade. However, after all the chaotic price action, stocks eventually finished mixed. That's true, but my reading of the markets that are referenced is they are on average down. Some are up, but a majority are down. We can get to that perhaps before we're done with this. The benchmark Shanghai Composite Index slid 0.3%, recovering from more than a 3% plunge on the open. The CSI 300, an index comprising the largest listed firms in Shanghai and Shenzhen, closed with a modest gain of 0.3%. Small cap indices such as Shenzhen Composite, CSI 500, and ChinaX closed with losses ranging between 0.3% to 3% losses. Right? There was no definitive reason to explain the wild price action. Roughly five. Now, that's interesting to me. And it's interesting for this reason. Roughly $590 billion, at least according to some reports, disappeared in China's stock market on Monday. And if we can believe this article from Business Insider in Australia, nobody knows why. There was no definitive reason to explain the wild price action. Now, they're talking about Tuesday, and I'm talking about Monday, and there's, you know, this is, but what I'm trying to get to is this can't really be a mystery. All right? $550 billion disappears and no one knows why. I'll bet that somebody knows, but the reason is not being publicly revealed for one or both of a couple of reasons. And one, because the cause, whatever it is, would embarrass the government, Chinese government. And two, the cause would reveal that the government is incapable of fully manipulating the markets. Right? And this market manipulation is an important thing. What do you want to say, Baldy?
Well, I mean, China's going to do what China always does. They're just going to change things, and nobody's going to know exactly what they're doing. You're going to probably see more of the corporate CEOs of China go missing. And, you know, $590 billion and a 7% drop. You know, their manufacturing numbers were released and, you know, they're all negative. So, you know, China, I mean, you don't know what you're getting out of China, and you don't know. I mean, we've talked about their debt before and what they have, that it's probably greater than what, you know, anybody reports. I mean, you never know how much gold they're purchasing and what the, you know, whatever comes out of China, you never know what, how true their reports are. Very similar to what comes out of our government when it comes to the economy.
No, it's worse than what comes out of our government.
Well, the point is,
that's
never
hard
know.
To imagine, but it's
never
apparently
know.
The truth of the matter. They're even bigger liars. We've talked about this on the program before. It always amuses me. A woman I knew went over to China and lived there for a year. She told me that what she came to understand is that the Chinese culture tries to produce harmony, right? It is their primary goal. Everybody's going to sing Kumbaya in China. If they have to put a gun to your head and make you sing it, you're going to sing Kumbaya. I'm exaggerating on that point, but they will lie to maintain harmony. It's part of their culture. It's accepted that lying is good, all right, to maintain harmony. Well, the result of this is the premier of China, a couple of years ago, he was complaining he didn't even know for a fact how big the economy was of China. He didn't know if it was growing or falling because the people that are running the provinces, right, the governors, I don't know if that's the term they use, but the governors of the provinces, they are reporting the economic activity in their province to the premier and to the central government of China, and he knows they're lying to him. They're telling him they're making more than what is really the case in order to maintain the facade that everything's hunky-dory. So even the premier of China doesn't know what's really going on there because they have a culture that encourages lying. That just cracks me up, and it also is evidence that you can't run a culture based where lies become acceptable. That's not a formula for, again, do you want to fly in an airplane where the guy that fastened the bolts that tied the wings to the fuselage, he grew up in a culture where lying was okay. And the boss asked him, did you torque those bolts down to 70 pounds per square inch? Oh, yeah. Do you want to fly on that plane? I do not, all right? I don't trust that plane if it's, you know. So, any case, nobody knows what's really going on in China, including the premier. So, any case, the markets, they say nobody knows. I think someone understands what the real reasons were for $590 billion disappearing. But this is the more important point. Here's a headline, another from Business Insider USA. China's national team is doing everything in its power to stop stocks crashing. All right? And it says the Chinese government is buying up shares to prop up its stock markets, repeating a tactic used during last year's meltdown. The so-called national team is injecting cash into the market after Monday's 7% crash. And this is according to a report from Bloomberg News. China's national team, all right, from my perspective, is analogous to America's plunge protection team, which was created by executive order of Ronald Reagan back in the 80s. The article continues. It said the government is also preparing to extend a ban on short selling, where investors borrow stocks and then sell them, pocketing the profit if the price falls, in an effort to keep the stock market buoyant, means going upward. And I have no problem with short selling. I don't mind. But I'm absolutely opposed to naked short selling, which happens a lot, I'm told, in this country, and certainly in the gold and silver markets. Naked short selling in the U.S. markets should be punishable, in my opinion, by 20 years in a slammer. But in any case, the sell-off on Monday in China saw about $590 billion wiped out from Chinese shares. The fall was so steep that it triggered a break clause that suspended trade for the day. The reaction of Chinese authorities to the crash is similar to what happened last summer when shares plunged more than 40% in two separate crashes. The Chinese state bought shares directly, limited debt-fueled gambling in the markets, and loosened pension policy to allow pension funds to hold more stocks. There were about 40 interventions, but only direct buying kept the markets up. What are they telling us? This is what strikes me as significant in all of this. They're telling us that the Chinese stock markets are, much like American markets, manipulated. They're admitting it. They have the national team. It's like the plunge protection team in this country. It's there to make sure the stock market doesn't fall. when you invest in the Chinese or American markets, you're not investing in stocks per se. People say, I'm going to buy myself 5,000 shares of IBM. Well, that's very nice. But is that what you're really buying? Is that where you're placing your confidence? I don't think so. I think that when you're investing in the Chinese and or American stock markets, you are in fact investing in the Chinese and or American government's ability to manipulate stock market indices. So long as governments manipulate the market prices successfully, you can bet on that that the market indices will stay up, and investing in those manipulated markets will be profitable. The game is rigged. You understand? They want it to go up. Now, if it ever becomes clear that either government is no longer capable of manipulating their domestic markets, those markets will drop like stones. And God only knows what the impact will be on the domestic and global financial systems. If you know of a nation that has a stock market that isn't manipulated by their government, drop me a line and let me know. I'm sure there are some. I mean, the stock market in Cuba, if they have one, it probably isn't. It might not be manipulated. I don't know. But the point is, the markets, the implication, if the markets in China are manipulated, and they admit they are, that's what it means when the government supports the market. Same thing with the plunge protection team. We've been manipulating our markets openly and by law since the 1980s. We've got 30 years of market manipulation going on in this country. It is as American as apple pie made with saccharin rather than sugar. All right? Market manipulation is going on around the world. And I don't know, I can't say that it's happening in every single country, but it's happening in a lot of countries, and it would be surprising to find countries where market manipulation is not commonplace. And so far as stock markets ultimately crash, is it because the government manipulation, the capacity to manipulate the market, did it ultimately fail? Did the government capacity to manipulate fail? Is that why the markets fell? Or are these failures because those nations were dumb enough to engage in government market manipulation in the first place? Does market manipulation really save the market from a crash? Or does it ultimately just add up with using the avalanche analogy, where you just snow on snow on snow until you finally get just one last little flake, and all of a sudden, boom, you know, that avalanche comes pouring downhill. I don't know what to make of it beyond, we don't have free markets. We have manipulated markets. We have markets that the government controls. They do it in China. They do it in the United States. I presume they do it in Europe. And probably most of the major markets in the world are manipulated right now. Although not necessarily. I'm not saying that China necessarily manipulates its markets for the same reasons as the United States manipulates its markets. But the point is, we don't have free markets. Free markets are unmanipulated. They go up, they go down, they're a little crazy, they're volatile, I get that. But are we better off with the central planning of manipulated markets? I don't think we are. I think our economies would be better and stronger if market manipulation were not the case. We're going to take a break for some commercial announcements. Melody and I will be back in just a moment. Please stay tuned to Financial Survival.
If you have a heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. easy to use, and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit, toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
I'm Alfred Addis, here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. What's next, Melody?
Well, all through the last quarter of last year, you know, and you hear with the decrease or the increase of the interest rate and all from Janet Yellen, and all those minutes from that meeting will be released this week, I believe, on tomorrow. From the Federal Reserve meeting in December in relationship to the increase of the rate. They were all predicting that the last quarter grew at an annual pace of 2%, you know, that the national gross domestic product, which is the sum of all goods and services produced, grew at an annual pace of 2%. But now they're all beginning to change their estimates as far as what the GDP really grew. Certainly we had the manufacturing numbers that were released, and even the Federal Reserve Bank of Atlanta said it now believes that the fourth quarter GDP only grew at a 0.7% pace. Now, I don't consider a 0.7% pace as growth, but that is what they're predicting, and that's down from their estimates of 1.3%. So that gives us an indication of just how good the holiday season really was. Even J.P. Morgan cut its estimate to in half from what they were originally predicting. So, again, it doesn't seem like the end of 2015 is panning out to be a very good last quarter of the year. And they compare the last quarter of 2015 to last year, but you have to remember it was all that bad weather. This year they don't have much of an excuse as far as why it is dropping so much. I mean, that, and so it's just sort of shocking and surprising that doesn't anybody get it? I mean, doesn't anybody understand?
Well, you know, if a tree falls in the forest and the mainstream media doesn't report on it, does it make a sound? That's part of what we're dealing with here. One of the surprising things about the Christmas season, to my mind, I pay pretty close attention to the news. There's a lot of things that escape me. I don't see everything, that's for sure. But still, I pay attention. And in previous years, it is a fundamental news story throughout the Christmas season as to whether or not sales are good, bad, or indifferent. I didn't catch that during this last season.
They haven't done that for the past couple of seasons.
Well, I'm aware of this. I don't remember necessarily, yeah, though it happened in the
they
last
didn't.
Couple of seasons.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that they're not reporting the numbers on usually is, oh, look at this, look at this, look at this. You couldn't get away from it, or at least in previous years. It's nothing. Don't hear anything about it. That all by itself, that silence is a kind of bad news. They know the lies aren't going to work, and they don't want to tell you the truth, so they just go silent. It's another one of those things that, you know, another leaf in the breeze that is not encouraging. You know, for those of you who want to see this economy hold together, everyone be prosperous, doesn't look like it's going to work out that way. It's, you know, doesn't prove that point, but why aren't they talking about it? Why haven't they talked about it? We've got another article here on China. And this is another one from Business Insider, and it says, the headline is, investors plowing into gold is a sign of how terrible China's stock markets are right now. And the article says, investors are plowing into gold, and the price is now up to $1,080 an ounce. This is a surefire sign of how terrified investors are about the state of China's stock markets and the country's growth prospects. Gold is seen as a haven for cash. It doesn't pay a coupon like a bond. It doesn't pay a dividend from a stock. But it does mean you own ounces of a physical precious metal that you can hold on to. A spike in the gold market usually means investors are worried about the state of more volatile asset classes like stocks or bonds. Over the past few months, China's dampened growth and wild swings in its equity markets caused major concern for investors. But Monday marked a new wave of worry, judging by the gold price. They're attributing, you know, gold is up $15, $20 an ounce in the last 2 days. And they are attributing this, they're tracing this back, and there's this coming out of China. Here's another one on China. This is earlier, this is from last week, really, but it was also from Business Insider. And it says, the big banks are pulling out of China. Now, that's a very interesting headline. And it says, now is the right time for us to sell this investment, and announced Deutsche Bank's newish CEO John Cryan on Monday after the long Christmas weekend when no one was supposed to pay attention. All right. It was, so this is over, this story starts out really probably about 10 days ago. It was how Cryan justified the deal to sell Deutsche Bank's entire 20% stake, 19.99% actually, but 19.99% stake in the Huize Bank, in China, to Chinese insurer PICC Property and Casualty. He couched the deal in terms of executing Deutsche Bank's strategic agenda, boosting capital ratios to prop up the balance sheet. But Deutsche Bank isn't the first Western bank to bail out of banks in China. Now, there's a limit. China's law requires foreign banks can't own more than 20, can't own 20% is the absolute limit. Right, you can't own 21, 22, 30, 40, whatever. So these banks, they didn't own a majority interest in Chinese, these foreign banks that we're going to talk about. They didn't own a majority interest in Chinese banks, but they are bailing out. And again, it says Deutsche Bank isn't the first Western bank to bail out of banks in China. Goldman Sachs sold its Industrial and Commercial Bank of China in 2013. Bank of America, Merrill Lynch, bailed out of its stake in China Construction Bank in a series of deals. BBVA, Spain's second largest bank, has been cutting its stake in Chinese CITIC Bank from 15% in 2013 down to 4.7% now, and that remainder appears to be earmarked for sale as well. Other banks are likely to pick up their marbles and go, such as Standard Chartered with its stake in the Agricultural Bank of China. Now, My point is, as banks emigrate out of China, as Western banks are saying, oh, okay, we're out of here. Does that mean those banks see China's contracting economy as a long-term phenomena rather than a temporary anomaly? Are the rats leaving the ship? And is there departure evidence that the ship is sinking? If so, which ship is sinking, China's or the global economy's? But the fact that major banks are pulling out of China, at least some of them, maybe we've got a trend here, maybe we've just got a certain amount of coincidence, but if we can believe this article, it implies that there's a trend here. The pulling out of China is evidence they don't think that the Chinese growth is going to continue. They don't think that China is going to remain profitable, prosperous, even stable. And they're just saying, well, that was fun, but we're out of here now. What do you think, Melody? Is China going to hold it together?
Well, I think a lot of these banks, too, are also realizing that China is probably not allowing them to have what they thought they could get. You know, China is there to protect them. They probably lured these banks in there, took advantage of them, and, you know, now they could also be leaving because, you know, they weren't able to use China as the way they used the United States. And so, you know, government didn't allow them to work with them as they perhaps thought they did. And again, you know, they're going to continue to throw good money after, you know, after something that China, as we all know, are having, you know, difficulties. They're not part of the gang. And so, you know, there could be all sorts of reasons, I think, you know, and they very well could be the rats leaving the ship. And but, you know, they wouldn't be leaving if they weren't making money. You know, so
yeah, I agree. That's the point. If they were making money,
I think
if they're not making money, they're leaving.
That's the
fundamental point. Now we can wonder, why aren't they making money? Is it because they don't expect the economy is contracting and they don't expect it to regain its prosperity anytime soon? Or is it because, as you pointed out, maybe they thought they could, once they got their nose into the tent like any other good camel, they'd be able to get their whole body into the tent. Yep. And the Chinese just said, 20% is as big as you can be. Maybe that's the reason they're leaving. Maybe the Chinese government is actually defending the Chinese economy with greater determination than we could find in the United States. It's, oh yeah, fine, you can be as big as you want to be. In fact, you can be too big to fail.
I don't see China defending their economy, but I see China defending, you know, their own banks. You know, they're just, hey, they're a communist nation. They are going to do what they're going to do, and they're not going to be bullied into doing anything they don't want to do. I mean, they do realize they do have some sort of power over a lot of these banks. With the amount of debt that they hold, they get that, the relationship with other countries. And even though their economy might be teetering, even though their debt is beyond what it should be based on, you know, their GDP and so forth. So, you know, but China, I think people underestimate China. And
they overestimate China. I think China has so many problems, and it's really such an potentially unstable country that China has to be, it has to be a tyranny domestically. Just to control, there may be scores of different cultures and de facto nations within what we call China. And not everybody in China is happy to be there. I was just reading a very fascinating article that points out that Tibet, they don't want to be part of China, and we understand that. But a major province, Xinjiang, if I'm pronouncing it correctly, they don't want to be part of China. I think Xinjiang has a high Muslim population, and Tibet is Buddhist, and they want out. And China has to hang on to these. And a fascinating article discussed the geography of China. And the way it works out is China is essentially a very isolated country. You can't attack China from the west. You can't attack it from the north or from the south. The only way you can get at it is from the east. Come at it across the coastline. All the money is on the coastline. Rest of the country is impoverished. Mm-hmm. Multiple nations, multiple languages, multiple cultures. And China is historically expending all of its energy on holding that coalition, conglomerate, confederation, holding it together no matter what. The implication, it's got so much internal problem that it can't really do much on the outside. It's very strange situation. It was an interesting article. So my point is that you're arguing that people underestimate China. I think they overestimate.
I think they do both. I actually think they do both. I think they underestimate to the point where of what China would and could do, and maybe they overestimate in their growth abilities and them trying to keep it together and not recognizing the problems that China does have. So it probably could be a little bit of both, but I don't think China.
It's not a homogenous country. That's one of the things that's made clear in the article that I was reading. The country, about half of it, is owned and operated by the Han Chinese, that culture. About half of it is not. And the article explained that it's not just a cultural thing. This is a thing where there are questions of terrain and questions of rainfall, all right? Where there's plenty of rain, the Han Chinese they're profitable and prosperous. Well, comparatively prosperous. But the only real money is right on the coastline. And you go 100, 150 miles inside, and all of a sudden, people are just in abject poverty, and there's not going to be a solution to that. And I'm just saying, they have so many internal problems that I don't think they can really... They can't really engage in foreign aggression.
That's what they said a lot of those ghost cities were built for, because you do get outside of that wealthy population. You get into the inner part of China where you have all the poverty and everything. And they built these cities to where they would bring in or to make the people believe that China was there going to help them, just to keep them at bay. I mean, it is because they were beginning to strike out in China, you know, if they have to keep them. You know, I can't say fat and happy, but they have to keep them, for a lack of a better word, at bay, to keep them from resisting.
That's about the size of it.
I mean, they don't care about them. It's...
Not everybody in China is glad to be there. You know, I mean, and I'm not just talking about people who say, gee, I wish I could move to the United States or Europe. I'm not just talking about that. I'm talking about people that really despise the government. And they are living in abject poverty. I mean, half the country is living on something like $4 a day per family. You know, that is a formula for big trouble. Sooner or later, those people are going to storm the castle with their pitchforks and their torches, and they're going to root out Baron Frankenstein. So, Chinese government, they are riding the tiger over there, and... It's part of the reason why I suspect they might keep the banks at bay and say, you're not going to bribe us into giving you more than 20%. We can't afford it. This whole place, we're sitting on a powder keg here. And we do something, we get just a little too far out of line, this thing could blow up in our faces in a way that'll kill us and our families and lots of other Chinese besides that. They are, got too much trouble to allow foreign corruption to influence what's going on.
They got enough of their own corruption.
Yeah, I'm sure they do. Let's take a break for some more commercials. Melody and I will be back in a moment on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate for those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad-spectrum immune-boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free, 866-229-3663, or online, thepowerherbs.com. That's 866-229-3663, or thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com, or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Alfred Adisker with Melody Cederstrom on financial survival.
I just wanted to make another point here today. The auto sales figures finally came out. They came out, I believe, after the program started. And, of course, the numbers are pretty close to what everybody was expecting. Total sales came out around 17.47 million units, breaking the previous record of 17.35 million from the year 2000. In December alone, Chrysler recorded a 13% year-over-year rise in sales. Nissan reported a 44% gain. Toyota Motors reported a 10% gain. Ford saw an 8% gain. General Motors reported a 5% rise. So, you know, here we are at another industry that is peaking, certainly not to the U.S. corporations, but certainly to foreign corporations. Here you have an industry that is peaking. Do you really believe 2016 is going to be able to provide these numbers once again? Highly unlikely. And again, here's a market, here's an industry that's peaking. You know what happens once you peak? So, again, another sign.
Like go seek, Melody, no peaking.
Another sign that this economy and this country is not supporting those numbers that are shown in the markets. And if you're going to get caught up in the drop, stay there. Don't bother protecting your investments. And you'll get to lose the billions of dollars. You'll be part of it, of losing those billions and trillions. I shouldn't say billions, but trillions of dollars that'll be lost.
Well, we live in interesting times, that's for sure. You know, the reason the call they're selling all those cars is because they've essentially gone into subprime auto loans.
Sure they have.
They're essentially giving cars
away.
And people are taking them. Yeah, I'll take one of those.
Why not?
At 0% interest rate, or at least a low interest rate percent on it, the rest of that sort of thing, people are taking the loans. And people who don't qualify for the loans, who don't really qualify for the loans, are getting loans. At least those reports indicate that's true in a lot of cases. Well, they already tried that with mortgages back in the early 2000s. All right? And it built up, and they had subprime mortgages and really cool. You had liar loans. All you had to do is walk in, tell a bank, oh, yeah, I make $100,000 a year. And they'll loan you X number of dollars to buy a new house. It didn't matter if you even had a job. They didn't care. Just sign on the line, and we'll give you the money. You go out and build a house or buy a house or whatever you're going to do. Well, that was when that blew up. And it finally did. That was the spark plug that started the Great Recession. But that was based on lending money in order to stimulate the economy to people who did not qualify to receive the loans. And they're doing the same thing. You know, it's like somebody playing Russian roulette. And they pull the trigger one time, and all it does is graze their skull. You understand? Puts a gouge in their scalp. But they think, okay, I can do this again. You know, what could go wrong? And they're doing it. They did it with mortgages, and very nearly collapsed the whole global economy. And now they're back doing it with automobiles. What, you know, there's no problem here. We got it all under control. You look at it and you listen, you hear about it, and you think, you're just, oh my God, these people, they are either out of their mind or they are extraordinarily desperate.
Why shouldn't they do it again? You had the government who kept them from failing.
Barely. It's like they rushed the guy playing Russian roulette. We got him to the hospital in time. They operated, and he was out in 6 weeks, and he'll be fully recovered in a couple more years. And he said, "Well, yeah, see, I can play this game. No, this is crazy. You're shooting yourself in the head, fella. You understand? This is dumb. Don't do it again. Don't play this game." No. The fact that they're doing it is either evidence that they're insane or it's evidence that they are extraordinarily desperate. But the whole system is just hanging on by fingernails. And in order to try to stimulate and make something happen in the economy, they're giving cars away to create the illusion that something positive is happening. And it's that illusion, sooner or later, that illusion is a lie. And sooner or later, that lie is going to be exposed. We're going to find out that a bunch of people who have cars can't actually make the payments on the cars. Then you're going to see the price of cars fall, particularly used cars, of course, but presumably that'll impact the legitimate businesses, and they're going to find themselves, oh, now we can't sell cars except at a lower price. There's no subprime auto loans. No, I don't know.
Since it was taxpayers, they were able to increase the taxes, you know, until we're all bleeding out of our nose. Now they'll be able to take it out of all that money in the banks, all those deposits that are there. They did everywhere else.
You know, an idea that's been bouncing around in the back of my brain here for a little while, and I think it's probably true. We live in a debt-based we have a debt-based monetary system. Time was we had an asset-based monetary system. It was backed by gold and silver, assets. The modern system is backed entirely by debt, which is not an asset, it's a liability. We have a debt-based monetary system. Logic suggests that in order to run a system that's based on debt, you got to have people that are willing to go into debt. Got to have more people going into debt, more debt, in order to fuel the debt-based monetary system. In the same sense that if we had an asset-based monetary system, we need more gold. We got to do what we do to get more gold in order to make that system prosper, grow larger, whatever, lend more because we got more gold. We can therefore lend more. We can stimulate the economy. When you look at it from that perspective, or when I do at least, it begins to cross my mind that if we're going to be in a debt-based monetary system,
government's primary business is to create more debt. Now, they want to do it on the basis of, why don't we give you a subprime mortgage and you could go buy a house? And you think, oh boy, I got a house. And the bankers are saying, oh boy, I've got a promise to pay. Your mortgage and or your note are worth more, multiple times more than the house that you're using that mortgage and note to purchase. Banks can make more money off your signature on that note than you can off the house. Right? The whole thing becomes nutty, but they want more debt instruments. And what crosses my mind is this. If the public won't respond to government stimulus and say, look, we have zero interest rates, go borrow some money and get a house or get a car or whatever. If the public won't respond, the government in a debt-based monetary system has to replace the public's private debt with national debt. I'm beginning to wonder if the reason that the national debt has doubled during Obama's administration is because the government knows in the midst of an economic problem, a serious recession, maybe a depression, the only way out is more debt, more debt, more debt. If the public is too smart to go deeper into debt itself, then the government says, who needs them? We'll go into debt, put their kids into debt. We'll expand the national debt. This is an idea that's just beginning to brew in the back of my brain, and maybe it's right and maybe it's wrong, but if it is correct, it would be possible to look at the national debt and the growth in the national debt as nothing but another form of quantitative easing. The government, you want to go into debt? Fine. We'll borrow them. We'll borrow the money from the Federal Reserve or wherever, and we'll spend it and leave the debt to the taxpayers. Government's not going to pay that debt. One way or another, the taxpayers are going to be indebted in a debt-based monetary system. And if they won't voluntarily go into debt on their own in the private sector, then the government just steps in and says, fine, we'll go into national debt and we'll leave the debt for you and your kids. And you're still going to be indebted, and we're still going to stimulate the system. I don't know if that's very clear to anyone other than it's only halfway clear to me, but I'm beginning to see that the national debt is something like quantitative easing. And from that perspective, we can begin to understand why the Republican Party says, oh, we're fiscally conservative, and we believe in small government, limited debt. You can't believe in limited debt in a debt-based monetary system. You might be able to feed that crapola to the American public and get yourself elected. But if you're in a debt-based monetary system, you got to go deeper into debt. And so, I suspect the leaders of the Republicans and the Democrats, they understand. This is part of the madness that is inherent in the monetary system that we've agreed to accept. And we were all, if I'm correct, we were all derelict, irresponsible, and perhaps dangerously irresponsible. Irresponsible to the point of almost engaging in, again, Russian roulette and perhaps even suicide. We have failed to do our duty. We failed to protect this country's monetary system and keep it with gold and silver and assets rather than debt. And we are now coming to a time when that's going to catch up with us. And the only way we can hold this house of cards together, more debt, more debt, more debt, more debt, more debt. And if you won't go into more debt, you are antisocial. You're an enemy of the state. You won't take out money. You won't take out a debt instrument. Sign a debt instrument. Get yourself a house, a car, a new flat screen TV. Trying to live on cash or whatever. Bizarre ideas, but they are the kind of ideas that flow from the madness, the essential insanity of treating debt instruments as if they are assets. They're not. They're liabilities. Yeah.
Before we ended the program, and we only have a couple more minutes yet, I just wanted to touch on this. We'll have to pick this up maybe tomorrow after Wendy Wilson leaves the program, after the first segment of the program. I almost considered purchasing Smith & Wesson yesterday because I knew Obama was going to come out with his new gun right legislation today, and I figured the shares on certain stocks would be go up. I didn't do it, but Smith & Wesson was up by 11% today.
Mm-hmm.
Obama's being tagged as the best gun salesman ever.
Yep.
And it was the most disgusting display when he wept openly today as he was delivering his new executive actions on gun violence. And, he did his original, typical argument to counter the gun rights, talking about the mass shootings and so forth. It truly is...
It's an abomination.
2015,
rather than an A.
2015 had been a record year or expected to be
sales.
A record year for gun sales, and you know what? It's also you had House Speaker Paul Ryan. You know, he blasted the actions, and he hinted yesterday that the legal challenges, were inevitable. He says, but we still don't know the details of the plan. I mean, these details are being kept again, sort of secretive as far as exactly what they are in details. And again, just like everything else.
Yeah, like the health care and the Patriot Act. Vote for it, and then we'll show you what's in it.
And even though a lot of his legislation, even with the immigration and so forth, is in courts, he still is going to go ahead and do these types of proposals to try and restrict gun rights.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how this all works out. But if recent history is any indication, we aren't going to see more gun control, at least not more significant gun control. There's an article in The Economist, which is a publication ultimately coming out of England, if I understand correctly, but it deals with economic issues and many of your listeners know about it. Good publication. They had an article back, a year ago, 6 months, where they studied gun control. And they pointed out that every time Obama goes out and says we need more gun control, people buy more guns. And what's the net result? There have been less homicides where people are buying more guns. Ironically, unexpectedly, you sell more guns and you wind up with less gun deaths. The result is, although some of the people in government say, oh, it's a health issue, you damn right it's a health issue. You got to keep a gun. You don't want to get shot. You better keep your guns. When you lose your guns and people know you don't have them, you are far more vulnerable to criminals and vulnerable to government. We're out of time, folks. I want to thank you all for listening. We will be back tomorrow. Hope you tune in then. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay.
Ain't it sad?
And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.